Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Seeking Alpha, Alpha Talks Editor's Roundtable. What moved the markets this week? The week ending Friday, May 7th, 2021. A crazy week that started with the Yellen head fake. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen coming out, effectively calling for higher interest rates. The market freaked out. And a couple of hours later, Janet Yellen said that she was just kidding and that she didn't think that the Fed should do anything based on her recommendations. So the markets recovered from that. And we had some selling, though, especially in tech stocks, which then rebounded. And this morning, major miss on the non-farm payrolls report. Apparently the largest miss to the downside, at least, since 1998. Which once again demonstrates that perhaps economists do have the easiest job on earth, if this is the best they can come up with. And but markets shrugged that off too. Bonds rallied a bit right after this was announced and financials sold off. But other than that, things are going cranking along here. Dow, by the way, I forgot to mention, it closed at record territory in 2 days in a row. And the Dow Industrials is now up 2.5% year, week over week. The S&P up 1.3% week over week. NASDAQ is down 1%. That's as of this recording at noon Eastern on Friday. Now, let me introduce the panel of my colleagues who will unpack all of this and discuss it with me in no particular order. They are Brad Olson, VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your host and moderator, Nathaniel E. Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, Kim, what are your thoughts on this? Let's hear it.
Well, the market had a pretty good narrative building this week, from moving from growth and tech to value and cyclicals. It seemed like NASDAQ had three sessions in a row where it closed down and then finally got a gain on Thursday. But that kind of got turned on its head today. I mean, there was a disruption with Yellen, as you said, and the most interesting thing I found about that was those were pre-recorded remarks. So she could have been prepared for them to have a market impact, but somehow they weren't prepared at all for it and had to kind of walk it back. And as we're recording this, she's about to speak in about half an hour. And so we'll find out what more she has to clarify on that. But it's the jobs report today that really has people rethinking on a couple of fronts. One is the recovery stumbling? Is it not as strong as we thought? And in the stocks, you saw that maybe going back to the kind of new defensive sectors, the mega caps, and away from the recovery plays that it did really well this week. And then on the other front, they're rethinking about a Fed policy. There's a lot of talk about tapering. There's a policy announcement coming at Jackson Hole. There's actually, Bloomberg reported, a $40 billion options bet on a change in policy being announced right around Jackson Hole. So that might be in trouble. And but it looks like the Fed is kind of on course for, as it's been saying it has. Powell said he needs more than one good job report. He still only got one. So they're going to look like they're going to wake it out, and we might see less of tapering talk, I guess. But the bond market reaction is the curious one. I mean, there was a knee-jerk plunge in yields, went down well below 150, but now it's comfortably back above in the 10-year. So, they're discounting it. One thing I saw was that maybe they're thinking it's the seasonality, because non-seasonally adjusted, you actually got a gain of 1.1 million jobs.
If it's that simple, if it really is just seasonally adjusted, it really does beg the question what these economists missed about this, and more importantly, what their data inputs are, other than spitballs. I mean, right? And by the way, when is Jackson Hole this year? I thought it was normally in August or around Labor Day, but maybe
it still is. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not for several months.
Yeah.
Right, but I'd say that's what they're
sooner
saying.
Sooner than you think. Sooner than you think.
It's true. It will come up
quickly. We're already in almost near mid-May, so.
True enough. Brad, what were you watching this week? Who were the winners and losers, and what other stuff do you have?
Well, I'll start off with some losers this week, just on some one-off pieces of news that were rather interesting. And Peloton, which is a widely followed name, had this recall of their treadmill unit, not to be mistaken for their cycles, which I think are still good to go, but their treadmills were recalled. You had billions of dollars in market value wiped off that name in a matter of a few hours. Then that was promptly followed up with some earnings, and now the shares are recovering quite a bit. So that was a potential loser there, taking some steam out of its momentum there. And then you also had some of the patent waiver news that the Biden administration was looking to try to ask some of these companies who've developed the vaccines to waive their rights to some of the patents. That hurt some of our patent names like Moderna, Pfizer, BioNTech, Novavax, and CureVac, which is CVAC. Most of those dropped about 10% on the news that was coming down the pike there. But as we've already mentioned here, a lot of the weakness this week was in momentum names. Most of those are tech oriented, but I went down the list. I looked at some of these $2 billion and up names. Most of the names that are up several thousand percent this year, all were down in the double digits this week. Some of those included some Bitcoin names like Marathon Digital and Riot Blockchain, but GameStop was also one of them. And that momentum weakness found its way into the ARK ETF, which is widely followed by a lot of different investors out there. Kathy Wood is known as this, she almost has a cult-like following at this point, but the ARK ETF was on pace to lose about 12% this week, partially because they do load up on so much of these momentum names and these disruptor-esque stocks like Tesla, Teladoc, Roku, Square, and Shopify, just to name a few, which led to a big decline there. And then otherwise, we had some earnings. Etsy was a big loser this week. Paycom also, which were down more than 14% each. And I think a lot of that speaks to some of the risk appetite. We're at the highs, as you mentioned, Nat, the Dow setting new records. And we just saw a couple of notes this week, one from Goldman talking about some of their risk appetite indicators flashing warning signs. And Bank of America, I think in a note that Kim wrote earlier this week, talked about how hedge funds were selling at a record pace over the past few days. So as much as we want like talk about the optimism in the market, you could see some underlying concern among some institutions and hedge funds. On the winner side, we can just keep talking about any name that's linked to corn, lumber, or any of these other commodities like copper, for instance, which set just another record high just earlier this week. And I think even this morning, that helped names like Nucor, that's NUE, and Freeport McMoRan or MacMoran, which were both up 15% or more. And obviously on the industrial cyclical side, some of the oil names and servicers benefited, like Schlumberger and Halliburton. Mm.
Gosh, yeah, a very busy week, as we said, a lot of movement. Stephen, what were you watching?
A bunch of things, like you said, very busy. I thought the Yellen comments early in the week are really interesting because she's the Treasury Secretary. She's not the head of the Fed, and she's not, you know, monetary policy is not her job anymore. And you know, it's either a major mistake or it's just a further blurring of the lines between the executive branch and the supposedly independent Federal Reserve. You know, I don't know that there is a line anymore. I don't know if she got a call from Jay Powell after that saying, hey, that's my territory. You know, I'd like you to walk that back and we'll take it from here. Don't know what was going on behind the scenes there, but pretty interesting. And then the jobs report. Not too concerned with the bond market reaction. Bond yields are already down over the past several weeks, so they kind of anticipated maybe a soft report. But the number certainly gives some needed ammunition to the doves at the Fed because they were starting to lose a little control, I think, namely Jay Powell and Neil Kashkari. Kashkari, you know, same as we're going on 60 Minutes and saying we have infinite money to print. He was making the rounds this morning saying, you know, there's no... we're not even thinking about a change in policy. We're going to keep QE. We're keeping rates at zero. And this report, this number was just what they needed to kind of do that. But anybody who's out there moving about the country, moving about their local areas knows that the economy is booming. Whether that leads to wage push inflation, you know, this year or next year, I don't know. And, you know, I'll tie that in with the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting, which is several days ago now, but it did happen after the last time we spoke. And, you know, Buffett and company have their pulse of the economy as good as anybody. And he said, we're seeing huge inflation, not just in the prices that we're paying, but the prices that we're able to pass on to our customers. So you can take your CPI, I'll take Warren Buffett. There's tightness in the economy, there's inflation, there's an economic boom going along for the Fed to say we're staying on the sidelines till 2023 is borderline crazy talk at this point.
Yeah, it was interesting, the Yellen comments. I mean, very little happens by accident, but this may have been an accident, and I say that only because she walked it back so quickly. So I suspect, what do I know, but that she was maybe just speaking off the cuff a little bit, and the folks that edit these things and put them out weren't paying particularly close attention or weren't anticipating the market to freak out the way it did. And that, yeah, then she did get a call from somebody, maybe not Jay Powell himself, but somebody, corporate communications or what have you, and walked things back.
Initially, she never specified which rates she was talking about. I mean, she didn't actually say, like, you know, the Fed will have to hike. Just asked a question about spending and said that the amount of spending that the White House is calling for eventually could cause rates to go up. Hmm. And that kind of got latched on. So I think maybe she thought, you know, she was clearer than she was, but, you know, she should have anticipated a Bloomberg flash.
But if she was responding to a question, that does lead me to think that it was off the cuff rather than planned. But again,
yeah, she's been around Washington forever. She does nothing.
Okay.
You know, there's nothing, there's not much off the cuff. There's not many mistakes. I mean, she said it for a reason. What it is, I have no idea.
Maybe she wants them to move on rates. Maybe that's what she
was a shot across the bow, maybe. I mean, Jay Powell, maybe. Right? Isn't he, he's due for, I think Biden has to make a decision, right, on his next central bank governor and whether he's going to extend the term or bring someone else in. So maybe it was coded language. We don't know.
Very interesting. Trial balloon. Yeah, maybe. All right, so I'm the only non-conspiracy theorist here. That's fine. All right, let's move on to the segment of the show where we discuss our favorite stories, favorite news coverage, favorite Seeking Alpha articles that we maybe have been involved with or perhaps just seen. Sometimes tweets figure into this discussion as well. And let's start with Kim.
I looked at a story from our good friends at Datatech Research, some research they did, on the funding of fintechs, VC funding of fintechs in Q1, which came in at about almost $23 billion, almost double for the year ago period. And they're saying that, you know, looking at the first steps of the banks getting, as they call it, Amazoned, and just like the amount of money going into these fintechs and, you know, the kind of, you know, the number of large deals that they saw in Q1, companies like close to, you know, going for IPOs or SPACs or getting, you know, or, you know, in the crosshairs of a larger company leads Datatech to say that, you know, this is, you know, they still like financials and as a recovery that, you know, in the story and you know, in the reopening trade, but medium and long term, they said, you know, we've seen how this movie ends. It's the same thing that happened to department stores with Amazon.
Yeah, the Amazonification of finance, I mean, that's not anything new. We've been hearing that for a while. And banks are still there. They're still, you know, printing record profits.
It's because Amazon hasn't gotten into it yet. So it can only be
Amazonification.
It can only be Amazonification once Amazon gets into it. So we have to wait for that.
But there's a reason they haven't gotten into it, one would think, other than they're just hanging around waiting for something to happen. But yeah, who knows? I mean, but it's not a new story, like I said. All right, Brad, what about you?
So I have to reassert my place on the celebrity beat.
Oh, great.
After a brief hiatus talking about Bitcoin for the past few weeks and kind of getting into Steve's territory, this time we're going to go for Bill and Melinda Gates. They are getting divorced. As much as this is gossipy, it's, you know, this does have financial market implications. They own billions and billions of dollars of equities across their foundation and their trust. So did an item earlier this week talking about that. And it is an important distinction that their foundation and their foundation trust likely probably, you know, won't be necessarily impacted, but their foundation has a little bit more, you know, there's a little bit more fungibility there. Just looking at some of their holdings there, one of which I thought was interesting is they own shares in CureVac, which is one of the names, and BioNTech, which happened to be two of the names implicated in the patent waiver issue earlier this week, and purely coincidental, but they have a large holding there among those two stocks. And their Foundation Trust owns the U.S. economy, right? Berkshire Hathaway, share, you know, Class B, Waste Management, Caterpillar, UPS, FedEx, et cetera. But there are two large holdings that our readers might want to know about is Schrodinger, which is SDGR, and Coca-Cola FEMSA, which they own more than a 10% stake. So should, you know, they're this, as of now, amicable split, descend in some way, we might see some volatility there as holdings need to be paired off and transferred as needed, but likely no major, you know, volatility there. But as we all saw with Jeff Bezos and McKenzie, you know, financial market participants are going to speculate and maybe they might have to, you know, try to get ahead of what might happen in some of those shares.
Yeah. Jeff Bezos, by the way, selling some Amazon stock this week too.
Right.
All right, Stephen, what about you?
Well, I'll go with Bitcoin, and it's a story from this morning. NYDIG, which is New York Digital Investment Group, they hired the CFO of Bridgewater Associates away to be their CFO. So they took the CFO of the largest hedge fund in the world, is now moving into the Bitcoin world. So the talent migration from traditional finance into crypto finance is picking up steam. It's a huge move. Ray Dalio, of course, heads Bridgewater, has been, you know, Mr. Philosopher King, right? He agrees with the Bitcoin ethos and this and that, but he says at the end of the day, their governments are just going to ban it if it gets too big. Clearly, his CFO feels far differently about that. So I thought that was a big story, and I'll juxtapose that with Galaxy Digital, which is Mike Novogratz's. He's trying to build like an investment bank for crypto, a Goldman Sachs of crypto, if you will. They bought BitGo this week for $1.2 billion. You know, small deal size as far as financial markets go, massive deal size as far as crypto markets go. It's the first M&A ever over $1 billion. And we were lucky enough to speak with him. And he said, yeah, BitGo does this, BitGo does that. They're into custody. But what it really is about, I'm buying talent, right? And if you're a bank, your talent goes up and down the elevator every day. And there's this mad rush for talent, not just in the crypto world, but the Goldman Sachs and the JP Morgans and the Citis and the Bank of Americas, they're all looking for that same talent as well. Mm-hmm. So quite the change going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with cryptocurrencies and the institutionalization thereof. I actually spoke this week with somebody who is from Galaxy Digital, actually, who's head of the de facto lobbying organization for cryptocurrencies. They're kind of like the ICI of crypto. And mm-hmm. I'm talking to him about some of the regulatory stuff that's going on. And there is a lot going on. And it's cross-border, right? I mean, you have different countries. And Gary Gensler, head of the SEC, now coming out this week and saying that, you know, there needs to be more regulation. There will be. It's already regulated, but yeah, interesting space.
And if I could just follow up on Gensler, those comments from Thursday were taking way out of context. What's going on with Gensler is a fan of crypto. I'm almost sure of that. What's going on is you have all these alphabet agencies of the government all battling for bureaucratic turf to regulate crypto. So it's not necessarily, he wasn't saying we have to crack down on crypto. It's a battle going on between the CFTC and the SEC and any number of agencies trying to stake out their claim.
Right.
Gensler was actually on CNBC this morning. He said Bitcoin is digital, it's scarce, and it's a store of value.
Very interesting, huh? He used to be at the CFTC, but now he's switched teams, I guess. Cool. Slightly bigger job at the SEC. All right.
Your favorite story?
Oh, well, I was going to... I wanted to pick on the economists for this NFP report. I mean, again, look, we realize that there's various factors here that go into these things and that it's easy to miss, but a miss of this magnitude just kind of boggles the mind in this day and age with all the data inputs and everything that they have. It just kind of questions, again, how they could get it so wrong. Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about a miss of a couple of tens of thousands or even hundreds of, I mean, several hundred thousand is how they were short. I just don't understand that. And a lot of these individuals are very, very well paid by their employers. And it kind of begs the question what they are doing.
Well, Nat, I mean, an economist is an expert who will know tomorrow why the things he predicted yesterday didn't happen today.
Yes.
We all know that.
Yeah, that's a good one. If you ever want to piss off an economist, also wheel out the old Harry Truman joke about one-handed economists. right. How Harry Truman said he wanted to have a one-handed economist because every single economist he ever met said, well, on the one hand, rates could go up. On the other hand, they could go down. So, yeah, economists hate that joke. So, anyway. All right, cool.
My dad's an economist.
Okay, I did not know that. So, all right. I will not make fun of them again.
I took economics in college, so I'm also offended.
Me too. I took it too, so I should be offended myself. I took micro and macro and international economy. Anyway, great. Awesome. So thank you all for listening to this podcast and or viewing the video cast, which hopefully many of you are doing. If you're listening and want to check out the video, please do. Our video team does a fantastic job with this. All kinds of really cool stuff in there. And it's really worth watching. And you can do that by checking out the website, seekingalpha.com/videos. And with that, we bid you farewell. Look forward to speaking to you again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.